The following was recorded at the St. Louis Bi-State Area Convention in 2014. The opinions expressed here on this recording are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole.
Hello, everybody. Hi, my name is Wayne. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Wayne.
I have a few housekeeping rules before I begin, so thank you all so very much. I know it's a long evening and maybe past somebody's bedtime, but hopefully I can share something that'll be useful in your recovery. So I'm supposed to read this here. Is my volume okay?
Yeah.
All right. It says, our anonymity, like our abstinence, is a treasure possession. We ask the help of our guests, especially those representing the press or media, to protect the anonymity of all members present. We hope you hear something which you can take away and you can use. So we have press here? Wow, we have press. All right, we ask that you eliminate any mention of names and references to members of OA's Anonymous and that no unauthorized pictures be taken. This session is being recorded and posted to the St. Louis OA website. Good to know that, so I need to kind of tame my tongue a little bit. It will not be edited. Anyone wishing to remain anonymous should use a fictitious name. Okay, so my name would be Bill. We request that two Hatters, that is OA members affiliated with related facilities or other anonymous programs, speak only of their personal recovery as OA members at OA meetings in order to help OA avoid endorsement of outside enterprise. So basically, this is going to be, I guess, an hour, and I'll speak between 30 to 40 minutes, and then this is the We Ask basket, and so we're going to pass around, and so if you have any questions, I think I'm going to do a combination of both, you know, so at the end of the session, we can have shares and we can have questions, so I'm going to pass this around. Okay. And at the very end, we will close in a prayer. So this session is before you take the first compulsive bite. And I was very excited to do this session. Some of you all know my story, and some of you don't. And I always think, I say, gosh, I've told this story so many times that people may get tired of it. But I kind of compare it to my favorite television show. Gilligan's Island is one of my favorite shows. And so it's like I've seen this thing 100 times, and every time I see it, it's like very enjoyable, you know. The honeybee was on a couple of days ago. And so I actually had a nice time watching this Gilligan's Island over and over and over again. So I just kind of say my story is just like watching an episode of Gilligan's Island. But in this case, I got off the island. And so I'm grateful for that. So I'm going to talk about the first part of it. And I usually start my story out, and most people know this, on December 7th. And that was 2010, and that's when I wasn't feeling very well. And I was at work, and I want to be graphic about this, but I kept going to the restroom to pee, back and forth and back and forth. And then I would sit down, and immediately I have to go to the bathroom. And then I think the last time I did it for that particular day, my eyesight got blurry. And I said, whoa, that's odd. So I called my doctor, and you know, my doctor talked to me about getting weight off, you know. He would always kind of joke and say things like, are you eating barbecue? And I said, no, I'm not eating barbecue. And of course, I was eating everything else. And the big book talks about how doctors try to help us, but because we're not honest, they can't. And so my doctor was still trying to help me, but he couldn't because I was never truthful. I was in denial. And I had taken a diabetes test like 3 or 4 weeks prior, and so he said, well, go to the emergency room and tell them that you want to take a diabetes test, but it has to just tell them you insist on it, because getting a diabetes test in the emergency room is not really an emergency. So I went to Mercy Hospital, and fortunately, they said, okay, we'll give you a diabetes test. And so I was there, you know, and I called my wife and was saying, hey, I'm going to take a diabetes test. I'll be home for dinner. You know? And so I went to the emergency room. They hooked me up, and they said, well, Mrs. Smith, we're going to have to keep you because your blood sugar level is not measuring on the machine. Now, not knowing anything about diabetes, I just said, okay. And so the machine went up, I think, to maybe 500. Now, I didn't know what 500 meant. Sure. He just said, okay, we're going to keep you. And they immediately carted me to ICU. ICU was like not the worst place to be, but that's when you're in critical condition. And I tell the story all the time, you know, so you heard this. So the first thing that came to my mind was, yeah, I missed dinner. That was the first thing. And so they carted me in, disrobed me, and started hooking me up with all kinds of machines, you know, just really trying to save my life. And I called my wife and said, you know, they're going to keep me. And it was just, I just kind of was numb, you know. I was like, you know, what's going on? And then I started praying. Okay, God, if this, make this be a mistake. Now, because my blood sugar, I actually found out was over 1,000. And so I guess they're like, we got a guy who has 1,000 blood sugar left. So they had all the endocrinologists. I don't know what an endocrinologist was at that point. You know, but I knew I had one of the top endocrinologists in the nation that came in. And in my denial, I said, it's not, he's making a mistake. He'll know what he's doing. It's my dinner ready. And I kept saying, it's my dinner ready. You know, and I was thinking, everybody said, fool, you're about to die. And that was the only thing I could do. I can only lock in. The big book talks about the ease and comfort that comes at once for taking that first drink. In our case, that first compulsive bite. So I had a lot of time to reflect on my condition. I got angry. I got angry at OA because I said, all this time I try to outreach to OA and no one ever called me back. I was in that self-pity place. Never took any responsibility for my behavior that led me on that day. So then I started thinking, how could this happen? So I'm going to backtrack. So about a year ago, I had a good sponsor, and I was actually not in recovery, but I had a food plan. And I would call the food and I would weigh and measure, I'd make the fries, all the different things that say, make these neat calls, but I was not enlarging my spiritual life. Actually, I'm passive aggressive. So I would let things, I speed bump. And so people would say things to me, like my boss, he would say mean things, he would say things like we have like a reception at work, he'd say, well, you all better get there before the plane, you have all the food. He'd say things like that. And one of my kids kind of just saying, "Why aren't you offended by that?" Because I was so numb and didn't understand my feelings, I was like, "Oh, okay." And actually, at one of the, it was like a Christmas program. It was the time and everything was like 100 or so people in there. And so they said, "Okay, Dwayne, you're gonna kind of bless the food." So I did this wonderful prayer, and then my boss got up after me and said, "Okay, we're gonna get in line because Dwayne will come and eat all the food." And no one thought it was funny. But guess what? I was grinning and teasing like, I was laughing, you know? He's talking about me. But how I dealt with that, I basically just kind of gave over it, you know? And so, and even my boss kind of gave me a way out. He said, I think that money said, Dwayne, you know, I was telling my wife, I said, I think Dwayne gets offended by those comments. I said, oh, no, I don't get offended by it. You call me fat? You make fun of me and I'm not offended by it. But because I didn't know my feelings, I would just eat over it, you know? And so that piece, I didn't really get in the program. And so I just started doing things. I was weighing, measuring those sort of things. And then all of a sudden I realized the program was about me being who I am. And so I was going to tell everybody out. So I switched it. So I was very nasty to my wife. When my wife said something, I snapped at her. You know, then I would call my sponsor and say, guess what my wife did today? And my wife and my sponsor, I love my sponsor dearly, but my sponsor kind of enabled me. So my sponsor said, oh, dear, oh, boy. And that's how I lived my life. I would and measure. One more to discuss in a particular fashion. But I felt like, okay, so I had a lot of resentments, a lot of anger. That was all bottled up. And so I think at that point I lost about 50 pounds, just like a year prior. And so we were working on a major project at work. And I had been off sugar and everything for several months. And then this colleague said, anybody want any rolls, cinnamon rolls? I don't even like cinnamon rolls, but I just said, yes. And so the big book talks about us, the delusion that we can be normal eating has to be smashed. In my mind, I just ate it. And I didn't turn into, like, you know, the old movies where the person turned into a werewolf. I said, what happened? And so I thought, maybe I'm making a big deal about this thing. And so this is around the Christmas holiday. So my boss, he had a tradition of giving us Neiman Marcus cookies, chocolate chip cookies. And so because I was absent at that time, he gave the cookies to me about a week ago. And they were on the top of the refrigerator. So I ate that cinnamon roll, and I felt nothing happened. You know, I'm cool. I'm not really craving anything at that point. And so I went home and ate the entire box of Neiman Marcus cookies. I mean, it was nice size, ate them all. And then it just it kicked in. And so that Monday, there was one of my clients who was always on a perpetual diet. And so she had her Neiman Marcus cookies. And I felt bad because I gave Neiman Marcus cookies to my wife. And I ate them. And I kind of hid them, you know, so she wouldn't know where they were. And so I'm like this guy on the subject of I ate the cookies. And so the person said, oh, take mine, you know. And so the delusion came saying that I'm going to take this home to my wife. And that's what I ate those as well. And so she didn't have Neiman Marcus cookies for that Christmas. And that was my descent in hell. And so with wild abandon, I ate. And one of the things, I shared this before, and you know, I have my goodie bag here. And my goodie bag consists of all the medicine, and some of you have seen this, all the medicine that I began to take. And all these medicines started happening while I was in OA. So this is a medicine for gout. I had gout, and so gout had these major attacks. And it was big, it's like really crippling. This is for my, it says sedation. So I'm not sure, but it was medicine I took. And I'm just pulled out because there's a whole lot of it. This is ibuprofen, my diabetic medicine. I think this is for high blood pressure. It's a lot of medicine in this bag. And the amazing thing, I'm not sure what all this stuff is for. But I was taking it. And this is to bring my blood sugar up if I had some problems because my blood sugar was going out of control. And then I was taking gas relief. So this was over-the-counter medication for nausea and vomiting. This is over-the-counter. All this was prescription medication. And these are all different types of medication, not... still got a couple more. Let me just dump it out. Injections. Okay. So this is my medication. And I was taking this while I was in OA. So I was getting progressively worse in OA. But the funny thing about it is that I thought I was healthy. Can you imagine I was taking all this medication and the delusion was I'm really kind of got big bones, I'm really athletic built, you know, all those different things, you know. And so that's there. So that year, I just ate myself crazy. And so the doctor would say things like, you know, you get a little bit of weight. He was always jovial, you know. He wasn't really in my face about it. And I was like, I'm going to get it together. And, you know, one of the things that I like to read is the story about the jaywalker. How many of y'all read the story about the jaywalker? And for me, and I just want to take a commercial break, when I first got into the program, the only thing I knew that I wanted to lose some weight, right? And it wasn't even about getting recovered. It's like, okay, I'm tired of sweating, back hurting, knees hurting, all this other stuff. And so my first sponsor, who's here tonight, bless him, he said, get the big book. I'm like, what's the big book? And so I got the book down. My big book is really worn out, you know. Got a little masking tape on it, you know. I use this big book. But at the time, I was always trying to identify out. And so when they say, okay, get the big book. So I started reading. I said, this don't apply to me because I'm not a drinker. And I would always, I mean, I've never drank in my entire life. I think I had a drink in the sixth grade at a church party, which is crazy. Sixth grade, I had a sip of wine at a church party, right? So this didn't apply to me. Especially we agnostics, I believe in God. Passed that by. And so I had a sense of arrogance about myself, you know, about this. And so when I first read the story about the jaywalker, this on page 37, if you want to read along with me, it says, let me see where I start. The preface to this is that they talk about how we deliberately go out to get drunk. At first we try to control it, we try to, you know, make excuses, that sort of thing. And it says, our behavior is absurd and incomprehensible with respect to the first drink of that of an individual with a passion, say, for jaywalking. He gets a thrill out of skipping out of fast-moving vehicles. He enjoys himself for a few years in spite of friendly warnings. That's my doctor saying, Dwayne, you know, you need to really do some exercise. You need to cut back. You need to do all these different things. So that was my friendly warnings, okay? He enjoys himself for a few years in spite of friendly warnings. So, yeah, food was wonderful. You know, I would go to places and receptions and eat and have a good old time. And I remember in college, it was a group of us. And we graduated, and then we had this habit of going to, I think it was Shoney's. Remember Shoney's restaurant? They had the best breakfasts, you know. And so we would go every New Year, and we would shut the place down, literally. So we'd get there early in the morning, and we'd leave until about 1 o'clock. And we had this sense of pride. Oh, I'm so full. I can't believe it. I love that. Crazy. Now, let's fast forward. So of the five of us, four of us have diabetes. One died at the age of 45 of diabetes. He died a very horrid death, you know, where he was going blind. He was a young man, got his foot amputated. He was maybe 35. And then he started cutting on his toes. And he was still in the disease. And I didn't understand this disease. And so I would go out eating with him. His kidneys failed, so he was going to dialysis. So he died. And that still kind of kept me going. So I used to dance quite a bit. You know, I was a dancer. You know, meaning I was going to clubs. You know, and I would win dance contests. I was back in the day. You know, 1970. You know, and so my dance partner, she got diabetes. You know, and still could not release the food. And my sister passed away of lupus, and so I called my friend, because she was good friends with family. I said, you know, I got some sad news to share with you that Yvonne passed away today. She said, well, I got some sad news to share with you, too. I'm going to get my leg amputated tomorrow. So I said, okay, wow. So got a leg amputated, could still not release the food, you know, and she died. She died last year, a day after her 30th wedding anniversary. And it was a horrible death. It wasn't like anything glamorous. Death is not glamorous, you know. But I mean, when you would see her, it was almost like she was in a prisoner, like a war victim. You know, her body was grotesque. They cut and cut and cut. And even then, she was still, her husband was still sneaking food in the hospital. She was in a special ward for
diabetes patients, and he was sneaking food in the room. It was that deep. It was that deep. But you know what? All that didn't matter to me. You know, I said, it's not going to happen to me. And so it talks about his, and this is really going to be uplifting. So, you know, he said, lighten up. It's going to lighten up back then. He said, like, God, I didn't come here for that. Well, yes, you did. Okay, so let me continue this story. Up to this point, you would label him a foolish chap, having queer ideas of fun, jaywalking. Luck then deserts him, and he is slightly injured several times in succession. So that was me. So basically, my first one was high blood pressure. Well, you want to take medication, and I was like, oh my goodness, I have to take medication for the rest of my life. That's what I heard. Once you go into high blood pressure, you have to take it the rest of your life. I said, for the rest of my life, I have to take this. He said, well, you know what? If you get well, you could get off of it. But I didn't know anybody that got off of high blood. Everybody just took it. It was just part of the reality. So that was the first thing, okay, the sister. You would expect him, if he were normal, to cut it out. That I would cut it out, that I got high blood pressure. I would cut this out. Presently, he is hit again, and this time he has a fractured skull. And so I had my first gout attack, and I thought I was dying. I mean, and I was like, oh, my goodness. I didn't know what it was. I mean, it was, and I missed a really important meeting with this official in St. Louis. So it talks, the big book talks about how we could, this chap can miss important engagements because of the disease of drinking. Well, I did, because I had this gout attack, and I didn't know it was attributed to my eating. So they say, you have gout, so here's some more medication, you know. And I would read up on gout, and they would say it's a rich man's disease because of certain things you eat. And I said, oh, I don't eat that. I was eating all the other things, right? So denial was like, I wasn't eating this. I wouldn't eat. But I was eating all the things that were caused. So somebody said, drink cherry juice. I was drinking cherry juice, you know, instead of saying, put down the food. So that was my first thing. So I started taking medication for that. And it says, within a week after leaving the hospital, a fast-moving trolley car breaks his arm. He tells you he has decided to stop jaywalking for good. But in a few weeks, he breaks both legs. So, okay, so I go back to my story of being in the hospital with the diabetes. So they tell me, okay, Dwayne, you have diabetes, and my wife is pissed off. Now, she's looking pleasant with the doctors, right, to kind of give this. They say, well, your husband has diabetes. I'm like, don't tell her this. Because she's always saying, you know, a bag of chips is your wife. And I would say, shut up. I didn't tell somebody in my mind. I was like, oh, how dare you tell me that? And I would go get two bags. I got two wives now. So, you know, I'm like, I'm going to show you. You know, I'm going to eat, you know. And so they said, okay, you know, you have diabetes. And, you know, so they gave me all these pamphlets. And I was just like, I can't believe I have diabetes. I'm a diabetic. And it's giving me this prescription. My prescription for just that medicine was almost $500. And that's with insurance. So heaven forbid how much it costs without the insurance. So they said, we're going to give you this endocrinologist, top of the next. We're going to have this aggressive thing. You're going to take three shots a day, and you're going to take this after eating another. And so I was afraid of needles, you know. And so I thought, I had to shoot myself up. This was my needle right here. This is a needle right here. And I would just shoot it in my belly. And then I would shoot this one here. And this kind of time release, I would shoot it. And so I realized, I said, this is the truth. I do have it. So I said, okay, God, if you help me, I'm going to always do right. I'm going to get out of here, and I'm going to take this program seriously. I'm going to do what I need to do to make this thing happen. And so it says, within a week after leaving the hospital, a fast-moving trolley car breaks his arm. He tells you he has decided to stop jaywalking for good, but in a few weeks, he breaks both legs. So I went out, and so I was really embarrassed of being a diabetic. And so no one knew. I was in the hospital for a week, you know, basically almost a week. And so I just took days off at the job. So I came back, and it was around Christmas holiday. So remember last year I went to relapse. Approximately a year later, I'm in the hospital with diabetes. So I get out, and so this colleague comes in the office and says, she has a German chocolate cake, and she had it for my secretary. So she says, Dwayne, why don't you take this German chocolate cake home
because the secretary is gone for the holiday. And he's going to go back, this homemade and all this stuff. I said, oh, great idea. The best idea I could think of was to take the cake, right? The best idea I had was to take the cake, delusional, right? Just out of the hospital, almost died. Literally almost died. I didn't really realize how deep near death I was until I started, I Googled, and I said, like, what happened to a person with 1,000 blood sugar levels, like, over 1,000? And then somebody said, what's the highest you should? They were dead. They were, I would have went into a coma, you know. But my higher power spared me, only for me to take the cake home and eat the whole cake. I ate the whole cake, you know. And the thing about when I brought the cake home, my family said, yeah, what kind of cake is this? You know? I said, the giant chocolate cake is good. We don't want that cake. And so I couldn't blame them because guess what? You know, they didn't like it. So I would shoot up in my stomach, eat a piece of cake. And by that time, the whole notion before you take that first compulsive bite was out the window. And I ate the whole, that Thursday, the whole cake was gone. And here I am, diabetic, almost died. And now I'm back to the races. And I would have this delusion of that I can control my eating. And part of the, and the big book says this delusion must be smashed. And so what does smash mean? You know, it's not broken. See, broken, you can piece it together again. I use this example a lot of my wife, she collects mugs. Her favorite mug, I actually dropped it and the handle fell off, broke. And I said, oh gosh, I'm going to glue this back together. Well, she caught it before I could glue it back together. My favorite mug! But she glued it back together. So it's broken. But when something is smashed, you can't put it back together. I mean, so it said, it must be smashed. That means the delusion that we can be like normal eaters must be smashed. And I wasn't ready for that yet. You know, I wasn't ready for the delusion to be smashed. So I just basically ate. I would make these excuses. I would say, I would go to the store and say, they shouldn't suffer because I have this illness. And so I buy chips, which is my binge food. And before I get out of the Snooks parking lot, I'm in the bag. And then so I was smart about it. Then I said, I bought two bags. And I'd eat one bag on the way home. And then I had the other bag. But nothing was safe in my house. This is Girl Scout cookies time for those who have kids or whatever. The Girl Scout orders were not safe in my house. Because that compulsion will hit me in the middle of the night and I would eat somebody's order. I would literally eat like the Thin Mints. And really, Girl Scout cookies are very expensive. Particularly if you're eating Girl Scout cookies, you're eating $50 worth of Girl Scout cookies and $60, and they're like, we're short. I can laugh now. But it was terrible. And I'm diabetic, right? Eating all the orders up. You know, eating the orders up. And so, you know, then I just say, Lord, I'm just really tired of this, you know. I'm really dying. I'm literally dying. This is all the medication at some point. I should have this infection on my neck. And it would inflame. And I would have it under my arms. And so I'm going to backtrack a little bit. I hope y'all still follow me. So I went to a doctor. I said, you know, it would inflame and it was just really nasty, right? And so I went to the doctor and I said, I have this infection on my neck right here. And he said, it's because you're fat. I said, I beg your pardon. No, I was fat, you know. But he was that abrupt with me, you know. So I said, no, it's not because I'm fat, it's because he said, you're fat. And I was like, how dare you? Okay, so I'm just going to try to explain it to him. No, my neck is... He said, okay, now you tell me what it is then. I'm like, no, I'm out of here. He said, what's wrong? I said, I don't deserve, you know, and I was all left on the huff and told everybody I knew that this doctor said I was fat. And they said, well, you're fat. And he was so rude to me, but guess what? When I went to recovery, I didn't have those things anymore. And so I said, you know, if somebody comes and said, you owe this guy a man, you're probably an ambassador, man. Now, of course, he should have said it in a nice and gentle way. But it was true. Once I got all that junk out of my system, I don't have those infections. I don't have it. What's what I was taking, probably one of these medications was for that. And so I was always in denial and delusion. So basically, and I said, God, help me. I took step one. And so what it says, before we take that first compulsive bite, there is a story about, then what's the guy's name in the big book? He is Fred. Have you heard a story about Fred? Okay, so Fred, he has, and it's in relation to me, at the time I didn't see how it related to me. They say he, a partner in a well-known accounting firm, his income is good, fine home, happily married, and father of promising children of college age. He has so attractive personality, he made friends with him. Well, that's me. No. That's supposed to be a joke. he's an alcoholic. Okay, and so it kind of goes on and on about Fred kind of going back and forth. And so Fred went on a trip. And then he dressed for dinner. And then he said, as I crossed the threshold, he was out of town. He said, a thought came to his mind, it would be nice to have a couple of cocktails. A thought just crossed it. He said, that was all nothing, right? And then it just snowballed after that. And so he wound up being in New York. He didn't know how he got there. And so the one piece, though, it says that, where is it? It says that, this is what he said after he kind of went to a binge and kind of got drunk and then wound up just really being messed up. He said, I saw that willpower and self-knowledge would not help me in those strange mental blank spots. And so I said, what blank, strange mental blank spots? And so that's really the crux of our disease. When you say, before we take the first compulsive bite. So what it tells me is that the disease really, the most terrible part of my disease centers on my mind. You follow me? That it wasn't the physical, the eating is just that's a symptom of this. And so for me, I knew that I had diabetes and I almost died. And I promised God with my own willpower, really, that I would stop, I would stop. But it said that strange mental blank spot. So that blank spot kind of clouds out any thought in my mind to eat correctly, right? And so as I said, it's strange mental blank spot that precedes that first compulsive bite. You know, right now we're talking about, and I don't want to make light of this, you know, but the airplane that's kind of lost, you know. So they don't know what happened. I used to always be afraid of a plane getting hijacked. And I would say, I'm going to Chicago. They're not hijacking planes. That's an American reason. But I was always afraid of being hijacked and going somewhere that I didn't want to go. And so that's really how my disease is, right? I'm trying to go to Chicago, and then the plane getting hijacked and taking me to Italy, and I'm just saying that. So I want to go straight like this, but my mind is being hijacked. It's taking me somewhere else I don't want to go. And so, how does that happen? It happens with that strange mental blank spot. We think about the, you know, have you all, and I know I've done this, where I was going to say something, and all of a sudden, my mind go blank. Now, what was I trying to say? That's how my mind acts in my disease. That when I say, okay, today, this is my food plan, my mind will tell me it's okay to eat whatever. So, right after I got the hospital, the only thing I could do... about that. The only thing I could do was to eat that cake. And we understand that we have a twofold illness, a physical allergy and obsession of the mind. So basically when I kind of ingest that food, that cake, it just sets up a craving for more. Okay, and so how do I arrest that? Well, it's through the 12 step. That's what short circuits
that craving for more. So how did I do it? So basically, for the first few days, it was cold turkey. I was just basically just said, I am not going to eat this. Lord, help me. And I had this mantra. I had, God, help me. God, help me. And I would have to say it 15 and 20 times because I would want to get those chips. And I would say, God, help me. And I would say, my mind, the disease mind would tell me all kinds of things. So go to Schnucks and get some water. And I would go to Schnucks to get the water. And I, oh, let me get some bananas. Let me get some bananas. Okay. And I have a sharp across for stuff. Really, what I want to get is those Oreo cookies, right? But I'm not going to, my mind cannot be just a doctor, right? So if God going to tell me, go to Schnucks and get Oreo cookies, get the burritos, and get you some fried chicken. That'd be just too obvious. So I got to kind of fool myself. I said, well, I'm just going there to get some orange juice for the time. But I start off in the chip line. And then all of a sudden my mind said, no, it's okay, go ahead and get the bag of chips. That's for the family. It's a lie. It's delusion. It's not the truth. Then that mental blank spot comes in, you know, that when you're taking all kinds of medications, you don't have a heart attack. It's going to be all right today. Tomorrow's going to be a different day. And then I go down and say, so this time around I say, that's a lie. God help me. Now, run the other way. Then also I have compulsive behavior. So basically, when I'm up late at night, I want to eat. God help me. Go to bed. I went to bed, you know. Yeah, went to bed, you know. And then, you know, whatever things that happen, you know, I have to seek out my recovery as much as I seek out the food. So I remember the first test was Easter. And I had a habit of, we had an Easter egg hunt. And whatever happened, I got all these bags of eggs of candy with the no chocolate, we have to do it. And I would have about 100 eggs. And only about 50 show up. Because I would eat for some of their eat, and then they would go, what the heck? Just keep looking for them. So that year I said, you know what, my recovery is more important than this Easter egg. We don't know how to do anything. And that's my son came and said, I do it. I said, that's fine. Because I'm not doing that. 4th of July. There's no hard fast food if you have potato salad, all this other food. So I said, okay, you know what, this time we're going to go. And by that time, I was actually kind of in 3 months to my recovery. I was really into it. And so I said, what we're going to do, we're going to go run. Kind of going to go run 2 miles, everybody. They were like, you crazy. We're not. That's what we did. And at the end of the day, we went and watched the fireworks. And then the door did not explode because we didn't have those things. Now, the biggie was Thanksgiving. So I said, you know what, we're not cooking all this food because this is my recovery. My recovery is the most important thing. And I would cave in a lot of times because of, you know, waiting, just all kinds of things. Came and went, Christmas came and went, and all of a sudden I started stringing together, things started happening. But the one thing I had to deal with, and that's how this book, it's really the program is about put down food and cleaning house. Put down food and cleaning house. When you put down food, you clean house. And cleaning house is inventory. And so my sponsor, he was taking me through the inventory. And he was saying to me, Wayne, you probably had a lot of resentments. I don't have resentments. I'm a nice guy around. You know, I was so unaware of myself. And 25 pages later of resentments. And part of this whole cleaning house was like, what's your part of this? So I spent a lot of time blaming my wife, my boss, and this was very clear about that, you know. My boss was an evil man. Oops, I'm sorry. No, he's not.
But you know what? He was not good to me. He cut my salary like $29,000. Matter of fact, when I was in the hospital, I called the job and said, I'm in the hospital, I told the secretary. He called me and said, why don't you talk to me? I'm like, I'm in the hospital. He said, why don't you call me? I said, okay, I'm sorry. I'm sorry to go in the hospital. I guess I had to look at my role in this. And it's kind of, I mean, so it was really deep. But once that stuff started coming out, I had no desire for food. Because the food was giving me the for a moment, let's say a sense of ease and comfort by taking that first compulsive life. And it only lasted about a few minutes. So I didn't have that need to do that. Now, the good news is, I don't take any medication whatsoever. None. No medication. That's excellent. No high blood pressure medicine. And I thought that you had to always take high blood pressure medicine. Matter of fact, when I went to my endocrinologist, he said, but you're doing something. This is me. I said, I'm doing the whole age. And so he put me on a pill. Took off all that insulin. When I came back and lost the weight, some more weight, he said to me, you can, this is some pictures here. He said, you can get off the metformin. And by the way, you can get off your high blood pressure. He didn't even give me my high blood pressure. Now, this is another topic that came back. He said, no more high blood pressure. Because of the physical recovery, I don't have diet attacks anymore. Not whatsoever. And coupled with this, I am thanking a higher power for this transformation, physical transformation. I went to do a stress test for my heart. And the doctor said, it's excellent. Now, go back a few years ago, when I did that same stress test, I know they said obese and poor. 3 years to say it's excellent. And I'm much older. And I had another test, and the nurse said, now, I'm still a big guy, so she said, your pulse rate is low. Now, your pulse rate can be low for 2 weeks, that you have heart disease or you're eating that. Now, I know you have heart disease, but I just said, all right, stress test. So I said, wow, my pulse is at 40. But the most important thing about this is it's a spiritual recovery. But all the things that piss me off, this evening, my wife had a car, and I said, I had to get it in somewhere at 7:05. She showed up at 7:45. My old self would have been so upset and angry, saying how disrespectful she is for doing this, and how this thing. I would have this urge to quiet that emotional turmoil, and I wanted to eat something to deal with that stress. But, when she came home, and she just came home, she said, I said, okay, cool. She said, cool. That's how I build life, When my boss, that same boss, and this is how I knew how it transformed me, is that when he cut my salary by $29,000, something like that was sitting to the buffet Chinese restaurant downtown. That was my response. I would go there, me and my assistant, and we would eat. And I'd be cool. Then I would go to a little Chinese restaurant and get a half of chicken fried rice and a bowl of fried chicken. And that'd be fine with that dinner. So I went into the office and just prayed. Your will be done, God, and you're going to take care of me. And the next week, he was carted out to the hospital, so he was in the hospital. Same hospital, I was diagnosed with diabetes. And so somebody called and said, guess what? So-and-so, he's in the hospital. And I was thinking myself, big deal. there's still an active part of us having to get rid of this self-centeredness. And so I just went to see him. And actually, I prayed with him. And I said, God, this is this man who abused me and debased me, made fun of me, and just cut my salary. And here I am praying for him. That's a transformative process of this program. That I don't have to run in fear anymore. The Bible talks about fear should be classified as stealing because it causes so much trouble. And so when you get rid of that, and I got rid of that fear, I didn't have to take that first compulsive bite. And so I think my time is done here. But I just want to encourage you to really get into this program and get into the the big book is what saved me. I know there's all different kind of ways out there, but the big, when I got into that program, I had a sponsor. And one thing too, when I said, I'm not knowing what I'm trying, so I thought, I was trying to work the program my way. I had all these conditions on whether how it's going to get recovered. So first, and I think I said this a lot, you know, I said that I wanted to be in an all-black group. There are no all-black groups in OA. Right. And I said, I want to be in an all-men group. And by the time I started, there wanted to be in an all-men group. And then I said, I want to have a black sponsor. I want a sponsor who's educated and all sort of crap, you know. And I was dying. Because I put all these restrictions on how I was going to be recovered. And I was on a men, actually I was on a men's phone meeting. And this guy, and I love my sponsor to death. He had a little country draw for West Virginia. And I said, he's probably a custodian. And he was a custodian. He said, I'm a custodian. And I said, whatever. You know. And he was not pushing anything. He said to me, okay, you can only call me once a week. I said, once a week? But I asked my other sponsor to call it because he had a phone plan only 100 months. I think he had 100 minutes a month. But the big book says that when we place our dependence on other people and things, certain places in our higher power, we won't get to recover. And so I said, okay. So I called him. He never said, don't do this. And that was the best thing that could happen. And I said, I would never force step. I would never share this. I would take it to my grave. He wouldn't understand. I gave my 4-step away. And he said, oh, okay. I remember something like that happened to me. Okay, okay. Then I got to my 9-step. I got afraid. The third thing. And I picked up the man. He took me all the way back to step 1. And I said, pretty good. So I can get on step 9. And I got sick of that, you know. And actually doing some crazy things. And I shared this before, and I thought of that, you know. I was at a fancy program dinner. And I was locked in on coconut shrimp. I told you coconut shrimp for her life. I was locked in on, and so my mind, and you see, I can't function on what you're saying because I'm basically thinking about this at the buffet table. And so I got a plate of coconut shrimp, and I had eaten it, and I was at the family building. And so the person was talking to me, and I was trying to, and I was like, as soon as she took a call, I heard her so as soon as she was taking a call, I heard her lock and said, please evacuate the building. And so people started, and I'm sitting there saying, what would be the conclusion of a fucking shrimp? I am thinking about coconut shrimp, and you know, it could be exploding or whatever. People just running towards the door, running, and I'm still sitting there thinking about the coconut shrimp. And I said, you know what, I gotta go back to step 1. This is crazy. And I went back to step 1, he took me through, and I am fearless on, I'm on step 9 now, fearless, and life is great. So that's it all I've shared. Thank you so very much. So I think we can share or we can question. We can share or ask questions. Oh, anybody wants to share?
This is one of my props too. This is when I was when I had my gout attacks, I would have to walk with a cane. And it was my fancy cane walking stick, but it was actually a cane. That was also part of the delusion, you know. I had a cane, but I called it a walking stick. Any shares? Okay. Okay, if not, any shares? Okay. Let's see here. Okay, if not, we will close with I put my hand in yours. Do you have that in your folder? Are you everybody? No, okay. Okay, let's stand and join hands.
I put my hand in yours and gather me into what we can never do alone. No longer is there a sense of hopelessness. No longer must we each stand on our own as we go to our power. We're all together now, reaching out our hands. Our wild strength, creator in arms, and as we join hands, we find love and understanding beyond our wildest dreams. Keep coming back there.